Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Science and Healthcare Sustainability Podcast. This is our first episode. You are joined here by myself, Luke. This is my colleague, Alex. Alex is our managing director of three relevant businesses, so in dental, healthcare, and laboratory sectors. He's managed a business of over £100 million plus turnover and has a vast experience in property, energy, dental supplies, as well as 12 months running a successful laboratory supply company focusing on sustainability. So, Alex, in the perfect position to advise on healthcare and carbon savings, as well as invite his network of suppliers and contacts into the to be guests on the podcast.
Thank you, Luke. Well, Luke works for a leading dental microscope company and has 16 years' experience working across the laboratory and agricultural sectors. Over his career, Luke has developed a personal interest in improving the sustainability of the UK science industry and is co-hosting this podcast with me in a hope to not only share his knowledge, but also learn from our expert guests.
Speaking of expert guests, we've got a really good one today. So we have Danielle from Recycle Lab coming in. Danielle is the CEO of a company that takes hazardous waste from laboratories and turns it into a commodity, i.e. something that we can manufacture new laboratory plastics out of. So we're going to ask Danielle how she's gone from working in a laboratory to her journey starting the business and the challenges and how she's overcome them, as well as what she's got planned for the future. So really excited to talk to Danielle today.
Yeah, I can't wait. She's on the train. She's almost here.
Taking the train, very sustainable.
Yeah.
The other thing we want to touch on is why we're doing the podcast. So essentially, we've been working, obviously, in the industry for a long time, myself and Alex in adjacent industries, and we can see the scale of the problem. So labs, for example, typically use five times more energy than the equivalent office space. And then in terms of waste, UK laboratories alone produce around 5.5 million tons of plastic annually. So it's a big problem to tackle. Yeah. And hopefully we can kind of spread some of the ideas of our guests. We've got some great guests coming up as well.
Yeah, we've got Jay from Biograd, and we have Dan from Econics,
yeah,
introducing to us his cardboard hazardous waste bins.
Yeah, things like that can make a big difference with very small changes. So yeah, we've got some exciting guests planned, others in the pipeline as well, but this first episode will be out very soon.
Okay, well, welcome, Danielle. Thank you so much for coming in and making the journey for Oxford. Our first question that we're going to start with every guest, and you are our first guest, so thank you for that, is what is sustainability to you?
Well, I found this one quite a tough question, I think.
There's no wrong answers.
No. You're not being tested.
Okay. Perfect. I think for me, it's more, whenever I think about sustainability, I think about my own personal impact on the environment, or what my activities are, or who I'm working for, what their impact is on the environment, and how we can, the negative impact, and then how we can maybe change small changes in our lives to like reduce that and become more sustainable.
Yeah.
That's how I normally like see it, is yeah, what sort of sustainable changes
can it's everybody's responsibility.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And reduce that impact.
I would agree. It's a reduction, isn't it? We're never going to be perfect. Sustainability, I don't think, is ever going to be completely carbon neutral and green, but I would agree it's how we can make those changes.
Yeah.
And the small changes, I thought we've seen that with the work that we do as well.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
What do you think is the scale of the problem in laboratories, in your opinion?
I don't think we fully understand it yet. I think there's like a huge lack of robust data out there for us to like fully understand. Mm. I think there's lots of like little pockets of data that keep popping up, and it's helpful now with like the green lab accreditations that there are, where people are like collecting data on waste or looking at energy efficiency and things like that to like look at what impact there is, like carbon emissions from the science industry. But yeah, I still think there's a huge lack of data, so I don't think we understand fully. But I actually think we're underestimating it as well. I think some of the data, especially in the waste side of things, is from like almost 10 years ago now. So it's like, well, if that was 10 years ago before COVID, like what is it now? And that was just an estimation extrapolated from like one university science lab. What does that mean? I think it's very large, and I don't think we understand how large it actually is.
One fact that always sticks in my mind that I heard not long ago was that one ultra-low temperature freezer at minus 80 uses the same energy as one household over the course of a year.
How does it help?
Which, to me, seems insane.
Yeah, it is insane. And like even lab, like a science lab uses 10 times more energy than a normal office space.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do we even go about starting to reduce that? But then I guess that's why the Green Lab accreditations are so good, because it gets people thinking about how they can reduce it.
Yeah, and turning it into a challenge as well, I think.
Yeah, I would agree. I totally agree with your statement about we don't actually know,
no. Because
there's no real measure. And there's a vacuum of sort of a accreditation or maybe a government-led sort of scheme where people have to adhere to it. Leaf and My Green Lab do a fantastic job, but they're relatively small organisations compared to the vast nature of science and healthcare. So
yeah. There
is a vacuum of someone to come in and say, actually, these are the way you have to do it and this is what you should do. People have kind of been left to do their own thing, really.
Yeah.
And it's been on the lab manager or someone within the organisation as a personal interest. We are by the river, so don't worry about that. We don't have to go back to it. So it's been up to like personal interest, really, of certain people. That's changed in the last, I would say, 2 years, where people, or certainly universities and larger organisations, have had their own interest and put resource behind it. But I would agree, we're just scratching the surface, I think.
But I agree, it is changing.
Yeah.
I think. And like you said, in the last 2 years, especially we've also seen that, it's getting easier and easier to like talk about it with people.
Yeah.
And actually, I think a lot of the, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think a lot of the funding bodies who like give research funding out to universities and things like that are, you have to have Green Lab accreditation now.
Yeah.
So that will hopefully, like you said, sort of boost people engaging in it. And
yeah. Then
we can understand it more and then, understand what we have to do from that, I guess.
Yeah, it gives the people who've got a personal interest a stronger argument to go and say, we need to do something now if it's going to affect the funding. And unfortunately, we live in a world where, you know, as soon as it hits the wallet, it all of a sudden means more. You know, if it's going to hit your funding, you're going to pay attention to it. So that's great. I mean, that change is welcome for the likes of ourselves.
Yeah, and I think the funding side of things is where the scientists themselves will start to get involved, because they're so set in their ways now. This is how we do this. It's all got to be done like this. They're not that interested in how sustainable it is.
Yeah.
But if it starts affecting the funding that they get to carry on doing what they're doing, I think that's when they'll start thinking, well, okay, maybe we do need to look at making these changes.
Yeah.
No,
I think there's a sweet spot as well where it can actually work out more cost effective to be more sustainable. So if you can get that message to people, you're going to get more funding because you are green and you hit these credentials, but also you're going to save your budget and you're going to be green.
Yeah.
If you can get those sort of things combined. I think.
Especially when you're looking at energy, right? Because
the
high energy things cost more, so that's such an easy way.
Yeah.
If you reduce your freezer to minus 70, you save energy,
save
money.
Yeah.
Like, that's a no-brainer, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. To sort of preempt some of the questions we've got coming up later on, I think what you're doing is fantastic because it's very visual. You see how much waste goes out of a laboratory. And, you know, I've never worked in a lab, but I've done a degree and obviously sold into labs for 15 years. And it's horrendous. And all the plasticware of my career that I've supplied to customers has to go somewhere. It has to go in the bin. And I think what you're doing is fantastic. So that leads us to the next question, is what do you do and where?
Yeah, so I work for Recycle Lab. So we are a waste management company, but we specialise specifically in recycling single-use plastic waste from the science and healthcare labs. We also have a waste audit service as well, which helps labs understand the waste that they might be producing. So we were saying, we're not sure if there's like a lack of data. So we help labs understand how much waste they produce, how much of that could be plastic, and how they can then divert that. And it leads into our recycling scheme. So it's actually also helping the wider community with like data collection as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're really there to sort of enable a more sustainable solution for the plastic lab waste instead of going for incineration.
Brilliant, yeah. I mean, often it is a last resort, recycling. You know, we speak to customers, particularly in healthcare, some large healthcare providers, and they're looking to try and reuse or, you know, buy renewable items. But healthcare and science are the same. It has to be sterile, or, you know, it's contaminated. It has to go in the bin. So there is always going to be a place for recycling. And it's not, you know, it is a last resort. And if you can do the other things first, that's great. But that's never going to happen. So there's always going to be a place.
Yeah, there's always going to be, and we don't like to call it waste. We like, I'm trying to change it so we can say, like plastic's a resource, right? We can recycle and reuse it again.
Use it as a commodity.
Yeah, exactly. But there's always going to be that like waste resource that we have to go for recycling. Like reuse, we advocate for that completely. And that's how our waste audits help us. So we look at how could they either reduce in the first place the consumption, then how can they reuse what they've already got, and then finally recycling.
Yeah.
But there will... it's not, you know, it's not the perfect solution, but it's better than sending it for incineration, and that's where we come from at the moment.
Yeah.
How long has Recycle Lab been going?
So we've been sort of up and running for 18 months, but we were actually registered back in 2021, but it's taken a few years to sort of get it up and going, getting the research done to see how science labs can incorporate it into their sort of workflows, because it's so new, and trying to get people to change their behaviours and get it in the labs in the first place was a challenge, I guess.
But once they're doing it, it's very straightforward, isn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of like, helping them understand how straightforward it can be once they understand how it works.
Yeah, it's amazing how far you've come in probably what feels quite a long time to you, but really, relatively speaking, to the scale of the problem is quite a short time. So, yeah, credit to you. You've done an amazing job getting that off the ground and spread the word. Just hopefully we can spread it more, because it is such a useful thing to put into place. And we've actually found from speaking to customers that it could be actually cheaper for them to do it this way. And it could fall into that sort of sweet spot that we were talking about earlier, where not only are they saving the environment, they're saving money as well. So
yeah, absolutely. And that's something we've been trying to work on, is how can we also make it cost effective, because sustainability doesn't sell itself, so unfortunately at the moment. So it's how do we make it incentivize the labs to do it as well, because we really want to make a difference. We're not just here to make money. We want to, you know, we were born out of wanting to do something about the climate crisis. So
you, actually, that leads to our next question. Sort of what inspired you to start Recycle Lab?
Yeah, so it was exactly that, really. I was working in science labs myself as a research assistant, and it was around COVID time, and there was like a lot more in the media around sort of climate change. And I don't know if you guys saw, but there was the Venice canals that had, no one was using them in COVID, so they went completely clear, and they're normally like murky and smell. And that kind of sparked, I was always interested in the environment and like not, you know, being too impactful, but kind of sparked even more of a passion to like look more into it, read about it, see what I personally could do, like make changes in my personal life. And then I was just in the lab one day and it kind of just hit me. I was like throwing away all these centrifuge tubes into a general waste bin that had water in them. And I was like, why am I doing this? Like, why am I so good at recycling at home? Yeah. Like picking things out of the general waste bin and putting it into the recycling bin when people at home aren't doing it right. And I go into work and there's like nothing in place. And it kind of baffled me that even if I had, you know, deionized water in them, and they could still not be recycled because it's from a science lab.
Mm.
So I did some research to see whether there were any companies that took science lab plastic waste and recycled it. But at the time, back in 2020, I couldn't find anyone. And then, so I just decided to sort of take the problem into my own hands. I like a challenge. started with a cycle lab because I just thought if no one is going to do anything about it, then it's just going to keep becoming a problem and something needs to be done. That's how my cycle lab started.
Was that quite daunting, leaving presumably a paid job to go and do your own thing? And
So I went part-time at first.
Right.
And then we went full-time 18 months ago. So we did it stepwise. But I think when you're so passionate about something, you don't feel that daunting. That's obviously, you have days and it can be stressful. But I think when you just really want something to work, you just kind of get up every day and be like, it's fine, it's going to work.
Yeah. I work in the dental side of the business here, but I have seen the pricing that the guys have been doing, and you're not charging a lot for that service. It does seem like a really good value result. I mean, I speak to dentists who are paying thousands of pounds per ton for incineration, so I do really think there's an opportunity there for people to actually save money by using this system. So
I think that's the next stage, isn't it, getting into all our dental customers and introducing Recycle Lab to them. I think they'll love it.
Amazing.
Because dentists are even worse at recycling than labs.
Oh, so everything
just goes into the bin.
Really?
Yeah, and then sent off at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So.
And again, you don't really think about it. It's the same with vets. You just don't really think like that about it, because if you're not in there working in it every single day, you just don't think about the waste that could come out of it. Because as a patient, I guess with a dentist, you're just in every procedure and you're out. You don't see where they put their, you know, gloves and instruments.
And dentist's time is money as well.
Yeah.
It's like, get rid of this stuff, give it a clean, let's get the next person in.
Yeah.
They don't really think about, well, that's got to go in there, it's got
to
go in there.
Yeah. So I guess that's like behaviour change and like getting them to think about it personally as well.
Hmm.
Excellent. So what's been the biggest challenge in setting up Recycle Lab?
Talking about behaviour change, probably that. The biggest challenge, because I was so passionate about it, so I was like, everyone's going to want to recycle, it'll be absolutely fine, people will be so on board.
Yeah.
And I think that was a real shock when we started, when I started going out and like talking to people in science labs and asking them about it, and the main thing that came back was time, space for an extra bin.
Yeah.
They were probably the main two barriers, and that's they're both linked to the behaviour change aspect of, yeah, it's a bit more effort on their end to think about what they're putting in a bin. But how do we communicate and make it like the value of actually spending a couple more minutes?
Yeah, it's a bit different when you live and breathe it like we do.
Yeah.
We kind of sit there and go and think, why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah.
I'd say the same thing.
If this is selling itself, why would you not take these bags from Recycle Lab and make it so much easier, cheaper, sustainable for yourselves?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a selling point for them as well.
Absolutely, it's a great marketing ploy for them to employ, you know, tool for them to say to their customers, we are sustainable because we do these things. So
And even more now with the ESG reports, especially the bigger companies that have to come out anyway.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I completely agree. It's like you have to then try and put yourself into their shoes and think,
correct,
okay, well, how is it in their shoes, like, and then try and understand it from their point of view. But yeah, sometimes it is quite hard.
Yeah, it's quantifiable as well. I mean,
yes,
you can tell them how much carbon they've saved by using you over not using you. And there's the cost saving as well.
Yeah.
So if you're watching this, no brainer.
Yeah.
It can be quite dejecting, kind of, when you come off. I mean, we presented to a very large healthcare group the other week, and Recycle Lab was part of what we presented to them. And they wanted to focus on something else. And we were like, no, this is the good bit. But it was probably too difficult for them to change in such a vast organisation, you know, 500 premises. And the easier switch was something, you know, that was just a product change.
Yeah.
And we were kind of like, that's great, but do the other thing as well. But
slowly,
hopefully, we'll get there one step at a time.
Absolutely, I completely agree. And I think we found that as well, is that we could be talking to potential customers for 18 months, for example, and it takes them that long to like go away, think about it, talk to other people, think about how it would work. Mm-hmm. Even if we're like there, like helping them in that, how would it work in your lab and do site visits, sometimes it still takes that long to sort of get them over the line.
Yeah.
So,
I've seen Alex work really hard to sell a trial.
Yeah.
You're like, that should be easy. The trial should be a no-brainer to just say, yeah, let's do a trial and see if it works. But actually, you've had to work quite hard, haven't you?
I think you've got to keep hitting them with, we spoke 3 months ago, you could have saved this.
True.
If you'd done it 3 months ago. We've been talking for 6 months now. This is what you could have saved over 6 months. And
that's a good way of doing it. Thanks for the sales advice.
So just the odd email saying, did you know
that
since we started talking, if you'd have moved to Recycle Lab, you would have saved X and this much carbon.
I think it usually hit the nail on the head, Alex. That's the beauty of your system, Danielle, is it's quantifiable.
Mm-hmm.
And you have got that system coming on your website where it does track it. And
yeah,
I mean, do you want to talk about that more? Is that something you can go into and explain the service and actually what you offer?
Yeah, absolutely. So as we mentioned, we are a recycling service. So we collect the rigid plastic lab consumables in our recycling bags. And then we take it back to our warehouse, and we sort it into the different types of plastic and then send it to a third party recycler. So we have a granulator on site, so we sort of make it into granules and then we can send it off to be pelletized in everything in the UK. But we are, when we collect from our customers, we weigh all the bags at our warehouse per customer, so we can say to our customer, oh, you've given us this amount of plastic. And then we have estimations of carbon emission savings.
Okay.
But at the moment, they're very, they're estimated from research papers that we found online looking at incineration of plastics versus recycling of the plastics. But we are actually currently working with a carbon footprinting professional who, it's not a full life cycle analysis because of the way our business is currently set up and the way that we're constantly sort of changing it and evolving at the moment.
Yeah.
So we're doing a carbon footprint analysis, which will give us a carbon emissions for our process, which we can then compare to incineration. But it will be sort of accurate from our actual process of exactly what happens, where we collect it from, how we collect it, how we process, who we use for the pelletizing.
Yeah.
So it's not really estimated.
Yeah.
And then we have an online portal that's coming up, so customers can track their the waste that we collect and that carbon data, when they can sort of log in and have a look at all the data.
Which is
on there.
Good for their reporting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's a nice visual, like scientists love data, right? So we want to be able to give that to them in a really accessible way. And then they can download all, they can show their colleagues, like, this is how much we've diverted. It's just a nice story.
Yeah.
I think it's really important to have that data for people who've made particular promises the NHS, for example, people like that, if they embraced it, you know, they're lagging behind on a lot of the promises that they've made for scope 3 emissions and things like that. So that data is crucial. For the labs, I don't know if it is crucial just yet. As you say, scientists like data, but just an indicative value is good enough at the moment, I think, for most of the requirements that they need for leave submission or My Green Labs. You know, it doesn't have to be spot on, but it is great if you can get it as accurate as possible. Can you talk to us about the hazardous plastic? Because I think that's what sets you apart from other recycling schemes on the market, that you can actually accept waste that has previously been hazardous.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are able to collect, yes, like you said, sterilised waste. So if it's been in contact with any biological agents, we ask for it to be chemically disinfected or autoclaved. And that's very dependent on, we work closely with our customers, so it's dependent on what their health and safety teams want.
Yeah.
It's dependent on what sort of hazards they work with. So if it has a group one, is it has a group two, what their current workflows are. So then we work out which one would suit them best. And then obviously we like to use the Naturama chemical disinfectant as well, which is more environmentally friendly than, you know, Uvercon, which we know a lot of labs use, but we tend to say try and move away from it because it's so toxic to the environment. And even a lot of labs aren't even allowed to use it because they can't put it down the drain and things like that. It's a bit of a shift away from that now, which is good. But yeah, we're able to take them once they've been disinfected, and then we're also able to, a lot of the normal waste management companies can't accept the lab consumables, or might say they can, but a lot of the time they'll either slip through their sorting machinery because you've got, you know, tiny Eppendorf tubes or micropipette tips. Or if it's manual sorting at their recycling facility, they'll just, if they find any sort of like, potentially, they'll might think it's hazardous because they're not used to, they don't know that it's decontaminated, if that makes sense. So they'll just chuck it into their energy from waste incineration line instead of recycling it. So I guess that's where, how we sort of tailor it more to labs.
Brilliant.
Excellent. What's the most wasteful part of what you do?
Well, we've tried to keep it to a minimum, but I think the most wasteful part would be any items that we can't recycle that we collect from labs. So, you know, sometimes we'll have paper towels or gloves or...
And they'll slip through the net.
Which is so unfun. Like, we they've got to sort it as they go. There's going to be, you know, someone's going to accidentally put something in one bin. Like, how many times have we accidentally put, you know, recycling in general waste or general waste in recycling bin?
Yeah.
Like, it happens. but we try and keep that to an absolute minimum. And then the other... The other waste is we use the soft plastic recycling bags. So they are reused at our site. Generally, they can be reused for up to about 3 times and then they'll be recycled. But we're part of the carbon footprinting is looking at what their carbon footprint is, and then we can compare it against other materials to see whether there's a different type of bag or box that we could use that would be better. But it's, I guess it then depends if there's an alternative, like a cardboard box. Can we reuse it? So actually, is the plastic, because we could reuse the plastic one, and can recycle it better than the cardboard that we might use once? It's, I guess there's lots to think about, but there are main ones.
Something I was impressed with for your sort of press release that you did in January, or maybe it was in December, was the change to your logistics as well, because I think that's something we don't ever consider for sustainability, is where's the product come from, and where's it going to, and how is it being couriered? And I was quite impressed that you've changed for northern customers. There'll be a box service using a courier, which seems much more sort of CO2 efficient than you know your colleagues driving up from Oxford.
Yeah.
So
couriers are going there anyway.
Exactly.
They may as well have
a
handful of.
No, absolutely. Yeah, we completely agree, and hence why we've done it for both a logistics in terms of a business, but also the sustainability part.
Yeah.
And I think we might even roll that out to our selling customers that it would work for if they've got small enough labs that can use the courier service, then we might even suggest moving it for them.
Mm-hmm.
But also with that service, those cardboard boxes that we provide our customers with, the cardboard boxes, they come back to us. We carefully unpackage them, flat box them again, and then send them back out we then reuse them. So we're going to see how many times we can reuse them, but we're hoping up to 3 times without them being completely taped up all over.
You very kindly brought us some bags as well. Would you recommend people order at the same time as they get collection? You know, so they can have it delivered and then collected at the same time?
Yeah, so some of our customers who have scheduled collections with us, when we do the van collections, we have that, so every month or every 6 weeks or however, we'll just drop the bags off at the same time, so we don't have to post them, which again helps with the carbon footprinting. So yeah, that would help. With the courier service, I guess we could also get them to drop off at the same time, the boxes or the bags. So
Double whammy.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So it sounds like you're mitigating all the sort of challenges within your system anyway. Is there anything in the horizon that you're going to try and further improve?
I think there's so much we can improve. I think there always is. For example, even simple things like using renewable electricity at our warehouse, like we don't have any solar panels, for example. Is that something we could look at doing ourselves? Using electric vans instead of diesel vans that we use at the moment. So it's a really big way up of trying to start and run a business, but making it as sustainable as possible.
Yeah, of course.
So it's definitely a work in progress, and we are not perfect by no means, but there's lots we want to do.
Brilliant. It's good to have targets, isn't it?
Yeah.
If there's nothing you could do, then you'd be worried.
Yeah,
exactly. We're never going to completely eradicate plastics from a lab environment, so all you can do is mitigate the cost and the carb.
Yeah.
As best as you can.
Absolutely.
Speaking about setting up and the challenges of setting up, what would you tell yourself that you know now if you could go back and tell, Danielle, who's still in the lab working part time?
Don't start a business.
Wrong decision. No, joking. There's so many things I'd tell myself, but I think the main one would be put myself in the lab shoes to start with and not just assume that everyone's going to think the way you think and be as passionate and want to do it as much as you want to do it.
Yeah.
So I think that would have saved us. I don't think saved us time, because you learn so much as you go along speaking to people anyway, but it would have made it easier with some of the conversations we were having, and maybe moved quicker with some customers if I wasn't just like, it's easy, just like recycle. And just like understood them more, I guess.
Yeah.
But does having the lab experience help?
Yes.
When you're speaking to the old Danielle.
Yeah. No, for sure it does. Because I think then you can relate to what they're saying, and you'll be like, I remember I did that too. And you kind of understand all the equipment that they're using, or what barriers they might have, and like health and safety barriers or space, or you could kind of relate a bit more to them. So I think that's why people also like talking to us about it, because they're not just a normal waste management company who have done waste management all their lives, so they're great at that, but don't understand what it looks like in a lab space.
I think the good news is those people like yourself are out there. There's plenty of people in laboratories, there's a nice lady at Liverpool and Oxford, and some big organisations that have got really passionate people within the organisations who drive it forward. And as we said earlier, now that it's coming into funding and things like that, there's going to be more people receptive to it who perhaps weren't when you first started up. So
absolutely.
I think you've got a bit more of an open door now than when you started, hopefully.
No, for sure. And we've seen that a lot, actually, over the past, like you said, 2 years, 18 months. We've seen a lot more, operation's the wrong word, but people excited or wanting to actually look at doing it who previously might not have considered it. So
definitely.
Brilliant. So we touched on the fact that we're never going to eradicate plastic from the lab ever. But what three things would you implement in every lab or healthcare setting if you could?
Recycling bins. That would be helpful. Yeah. I think we need to look at reuse, like we touched upon earlier.
Yeah.
And there's not that many products and services around for reuse, or not that many tried and tested that scientists are going to be happy with, because obviously you can't have things that are contaminated in any way if they're using in healthcare or even in research. But there are a few tip washing products out there that can wash pipette tips 10 times.
Yeah.
And then they can be recycled after. So anything that's kind of looking at the reuse side of things, I'd say, is definitely something that would be great. And then also, I think there needs to be a shift in policy and regulations around sterilisation and hazardous waste, so that it makes it easier for companies like us to be able to help recycle.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of a lack of, policies and understanding from the people who make the policies about that there's companies like us out there that can now do this, so can we have some support in being able to roll it out?
Yeah, there's so many easy wins out there for the renewables, just picking up on that. We were talking to one company called, shout out to Medicus, actually, they're a great company, and they produce surgical caps, which they've fully carbon sort of tested, and they've got the carbon equivalent to the disposable caps. I think it's something like eight disposable caps equals one reusable, but then the reusable can last for 3 years, so the payback is so quick on those kind of things. And it's just an awareness thing. I just don't think these big groups know that there's an option to do that, or maybe it's the hurdle of having to put, you know, a process of washing them in, or, you know, the initial outlay of buying them.
Mm.
But that simple change would save a fortune over time.
Yeah.
And so much carbon. So yeah, I think you're right to say about the renewables. Interesting to hear how you're going to answer this one, because I think your product does offer a saving. But is sustainability worth paying for, or does it have to be cost effective?
I think it is worth paying for, but that might just be because I'm a bit biased. Because obviously we've got the business and we want to be able to recycle, but it does cost more. And I think from my point of view, our recycling scheme costs more than a normal recycling scheme or general waste, because there's more steps in our process than a normal recycling scheme. So we collect it, we then sort it into the different types, granulate it, pelletize it, bring it back to our warehouse, then we can either sell it or make our own products. Whereas a normal recycling company would just take it to their sorting facility and then they'll might sell it on to someone else. So for them it's there's a lot less steps, so they can kind of make it cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
There's bulk, whereas at the moment there's no bulk.
Yeah.
So there, that's why our service would cost more than a normal recycling. And I think it's very similar for most things in sustainability, because it's so new, the infrastructure might not be there, so it might cost more, or it might be a bit more complicated because it's got more steps, because then it makes it carbon neutral or something, I don't know. But then that's why it costs more.
But the early adopters need to jump on board with it.
Yeah.
In order to
make it,
get the ball rolling,
yeah,
and make it cost effective.
Absolutely. Completely agree. So yeah, I think it does, but I think then I think caveat that with, if we're going to get everyone to make sustainable changes, money does talk, so it has to be cheaper.
Yeah.
Or to an extent, make it as close as you possibly can to what we do nowadays.
Yeah.
It's so hard. It's so hard to weigh up the pros and cons of each way.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Got a bit rogue off the questions here, but how scalable is your operation? Like, say you did have a huge organisation like the NHS. Say, okay, Danielle, we're going to recycle everything.
Yeah, great. Bring it on. I want more plastic.
But, you know, that's a lot of plastic.
It is a lot of plastic. And I think that's where having multiple sites dotted around the country will be how we would scale.
Right, yeah, interesting.
Not just Garing Courier. And that would help with the carbon emission savings anyway.
Yes.
So we'd have, you know, a pocket up north, a pocket down southwest, southeast, Midlands, so that then those companies can go into there, and then we can go to into our recycling company, where, rather than coming all the way to Oxford and then all the way somewhere else. I think that's the way we'll do it.
Yeah,
perfect.
It's cheap up north, you know.
Yeah, I know. I keep thinking like, damn, I'm in the wrong part of the country.
So I guess that leads us nicely onto what do you see as the future for Recycle Lab? Is it recycling pockets all over the UK?
Mm, yeah, I think
Europe?
So. Europe,
international?
Yeah. International, yeah, absolutely. No, I think we actually have a lot of labs contact us from Europe asking for a solution. I think there might be a couple starting up there, but there's nothing robust in place, I don't think. So definitely Europe.
Could be a franchise.
Yeah, watch out. Yeah. But yeah, definitely expanding, getting as much plastic recycled as possible. And then hopefully having our hazardous waste stream that we're developing a pilot for. So then that will kind of knock down the barrier for labs having to disinfect themselves, which is a challenge sometimes for some of the labs. So that will help.
Yeah, perhaps not the US for 4 years based on yesterday's speech.
Yeah, we might give that one a miss.
Might not be receptive to it just yet. Okay, brilliant. And how about the product range? Is anything coming new? Larger bags, smaller bags? You know, anything new that we should let listeners know about?
I think it would be watch the space for our log portal, because I think that would be really helpful and help with sort of getting customers on board with our recycling. Watch this space because we are launching new products that are going to be made from our recycled plastic.
Brilliant.
So we're starting with sort of lab accessories like test tube racks.
Great.
Which will be launching hopefully springtime this year. And then we are developing some high quality plastic so that we can make consumables from it. So centrifuge tubes and PET tips.
I guess that's a natural progression, isn't it? Going from bringing the plastic in to making things out of it and sending it back to the labs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it closes the loop, doesn't it?
It is beginning to close that loop, which is really exciting and something that
brilliant.
When we started the company, that was our ultimate goal, is to work towards that. So it's nice that we're taking small steps to sort of get there in the end.
Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant, and that'll create jobs in wherever you decide to do it as well, which is great.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Brilliant. So our final question, and it's gone fast actually. What other product services from other suppliers would you recommend scientists use?
So we've mentioned Naturama because that's more environmentally friendly, chemical disinfectant.
Don't feel like you have to say that just because we're giving you a pastry.
It's really nice. And then when I mentioned about the peptic washing, so
yeah.
Grenova, who are that have that sort of peptic washer.
Yeah,
I've spoken with them a couple of times, but I think there needs to be some people need to get on board with the fact that they can be
reuse them.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, anything to do with, like I mentioned before, just reusing items.
Yeah.
And switching to maybe new freezers that are more energy efficient. Any sort of big equipment that's old, can you switch out, which will be,
yeah.
I know you have to then, you know, get rid of the old equipment, but actually
yeah.
it would be more sustainable to get a new one that's more energy efficient.
Coincidentally, we can help with that.
Yeah.
So if anyone is looking if anyone is looking for some new lab equipment,
yeah.
Give me a shout.
Another product would be looking at new sterilization machines. So anything that is a bit more environmentally friendly than an autoclave, for example, and there's some new technology coming out. So there's the EnvoMed that uses a mixture of hydrogen peroxide and parasitic acid to sterilise the waste.
I had a question on EnvoMed.
Mm.
Do you see synergy there with you having one of their units, for example?
Yeah.
And
so
feeding your waste into it and doing it all there on site?
Yeah,
right.
So that's our ultimate goal, is our pilot that we're developing will be using their machine at our customer site for pilot testing. And then once we pilot tested that and said, oh yeah, we can sterilise the waste through it, it's sterile, we can then collect it and recycle it, and we've recycled it
yeah.
to show that that can work, we'll then work towards getting that on our site so we can collect hazardous waste and sterilise on our site.
What are the hurdles for collecting hazardous waste over sterilised waste?
Oh, a lot. There's a lot of hurdles. So the reason why we're having to do the pilot at a custom site is because we don't have the licences in place to collect hazardous waste.
Right.
So the site has to be licensed with the Environment Agency, and then you also have to have use like hazardous waste consignment notes and have a licensed hazardous waste carrier license as well. So there's quite a few sort of environment licenses, obviously, because you can't just have anybody picking up hazardous
yeah,
waste.
Yeah.
But that's probably the main barriers to us implementing it. But it's definitely
okay.
something we're working on.
Great. Just a quick word from our sponsors, CG Optic UK Limited. UK and Ireland distributors for the Flexion microscope, which is the premier dental microscope worldwide. Give them a shout if you any interest in that. Speak to Luke.
Give me a shout.
Sales
yeah.
and marketing director at CJ Optic UK Limited. Provided the pastries.
Well, thank you, Danielle, so much for coming in, making the journey from Oxford to come and see us.
Yeah, great episode. Really interesting to hear. How Recycle Lab's taken off and their plans for the future.
Yeah, I love the plans that they've got. Some of the things that Danielle highlighted they've got in the pipeline are brilliant.
Particularly interesting to hear about the products that are made from this waste
yeah.
And how she plans to kind of complete the life cycle, if you like, from waste to new products.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Well, we loved it. We hope you found it interesting as well. If you did, please like and subscribe to the podcast. We have more episodes coming. And look out for the next one, which will be Dan, the Managing Director of Econics, which we'll be recording very soon.
Bye for now.